Hey, everybody. Kevin Grossman, president of Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards. Welcome to 2021 and the new Candy Benchmark Research Program year. We've also got lots of events throughout the year and new programs as well, a new learning program as well as benchmark membership. And you can find all of this at thetalentboard.org. Enjoy the podcast.
So Einstein says that problems cannot be solved with the same mind that created it. And so the concept behind the power, and this has actually been discovered, of diversity is that when you have cognitive diversity, so diversity of thought, when you have racial and ethnic diversity, so people that have been exposed to a completely different walk of life, when you have even educational diversity, what you have is a diversity of thought and perspective, which absolutely will contribute to innovation and disruption.
You're listening to the Candy Shop Talk podcast, brought to you by Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards Benchmark Research, and hosted by Kevin W. Grossman. Talent Board is the first nonprofit research organization focused on elevating and promoting a quality candidate experience. The Candy Shop Talk podcast welcomes Talia Fox, a diversity and inclusion strategist and CEO of Kusai Global Incorporated, a learning consulting firm that specializes in virtual and instructor-led trainings and education. Listen in on how improving candidate experience impacts recruiting and the business bottom line. Talia, thank you so much for joining me on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. Before we dive into the rest of the show, why don't you tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do today?
Thank you, Kevin. So happy to be here. As you said, Talia Fox, I'm the CEO of Kusai Global. Kusai is actually a culture transformation acronym for knowledge, understanding, strategy, and implementation. So it's a framework that we approach all of our clients with. And so what do we do for them? Well, we are a leadership development firm, but I like to call us a culture transformation firm. So we look at every aspect of organizations to figure out how do you create a culture that bears fruit, that grows talent, that innovates and disrupts. And so we research and dive into all of the processes, psychology, everything you can think of in order to support that aim of achieving great things through culture transformation.
Extremely important today. Always been important, not like it hasn't been. And we'll get into this more in the podcast, what has been going on in the past year and continues today, more so than I think that we've seen or had visibility on and really need to see all this upheaval that we've been experiencing that is extremely important, the work that you do. And I like the whole idea around culture transformation, and who doesn't like a good acronym, right? So this is what I want to ask first. It's been a checkbox for a long time. There's been leadership surveys that are done with employers every year for years, Deloitte, McKinsey, the list goes on where what's important to organization, our people are important. Diversity and inclusion is important. And I'm not trying to take away that it's not, but it just feels like it's just been that checkbox, right? So tell us, why is it so critical? Why is diversity critical for innovation, creativity, openness? And why does it benefit the success of all of us? So individuals, organizations, leaders, teams, cultures, give us your perspective.
So diversity, equity, and inclusion can guide you to your strategy. So diversity, that's your recruitment strategy. You want to recruit diverse talent. Inclusion is your culture strategy. So you want to have cultural habits that are inclusive. And retention is your equity strategy. So typically, when you provide a level playing field and everyone has the opportunity for progress, you will retain top talent and diverse talent at a greater rate. So I want to break this down a little bit around innovation and disruption and diversity, equity, and inclusion. So Einstein says that problems cannot be solved with the same mind that created it. And so the concept behind the power, and this has actually been discovered, of diversity is that when you have cognitive diversity, so diversity of thought, when you have racial and ethnic diversity, so people that have been exposed to a completely different walk of life, when you have even educational diversity, what you have is a diversity of thought and perspective, which absolutely will contribute to innovation and disruption. Now, when we talk about openness and we talk about culture, I am pretty blunt with the leaders that I work with. And I work with the highest leaders in this organization, that if you are not thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, you are not thinking about your people. You do not have a people and culture strategy if you are not thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is what it's about. It's about figuring out diverse needs, attracting the highest quality talent that can give you big, different ideas, and creating a culture where everyone can thrive and rally behind this great vision and this mission. And so I think the problem here, Kevin, is that we always look at this as something that we're doing on the outside or something that's kind of sort of attached to the work, but it is it. It is the core. It is the heart of everything that we do if we think about people and what we need to do to motivate and influence people.
We're going to dig into that a little bit more and differentiate even further, because there are, and even in my always learning, which is one of the big reasons why I love doing what I do and having conversations with individuals like you and many others, is that we are always learning. We need to be exposed to different ideas. I think it helps us grow as people, and the list goes on. 2020, I mean, I know we're all so tired of talking about it, right? The year, but it was a year like no other. And it wasn't just the impact of COVID-19, which has been bad enough and continues, but the continued social and racial inequity and injustice and the political divisiveness and just all the upheaval that we really saw come to the forefront last year. And again, that continues. It's impacted the world of work in many different ways, both positive and negative for that matter. One thing that we did see in our research that we do is that there were employers who really engaged in a lot more empathetic communication with not only the job candidates that were interested in their companies, but also the current employees, because they had to figure out, how do we keep the business moving forward with all this stuff happening around us? And the fact that now, for the most part, unless we absolutely have in-person positions, that everything's virtualized now. We have to do everything virtually, the interviewing, the onboarding. And it's hard, right? Like right now, you and I are recording this podcast, and even though it's an audio podcast, we are on video, we see each other, yet I'm looking at my camera and not at you. It's hard. We don't have that same interactivity. Anyway, my diatribe aside, what are the differences, I guess, is what I want to dig into, because I'm learning a lot more about this myself, that diversity is one thing, bringing in diverse people of different experiences and cultures and backgrounds. But inclusion is, they're not the same thing. They go hand in hand, right? So can you talk about the differences between those two? And what are employers today, do you think, and leaders, since that's a lot of work that you do, that are doing right and wrong? And where does equity fit in as well? I always am infamous for giving 8-part questions, Talia. So are you following me on that?
I'm completely following you. And I want to dissect this just a little bit. I'm a systems thinker. Good. And for the listeners, a systems thinker is someone that looks at the different parts of the system and figures out what has the biggest impact. So I want to address the first conversation that we're having about social and racial injustice, and we're kind of lumping that into diversity, equity, and inclusion. I think this will be very, very helpful for organizations trying to wrap their head around this. So diversity, equity, and inclusion is absolutely a people strategy. And I will define that in just a moment. So that's your people and culture strategy. That is actually, it's connected to, but separate from, the issue of racial injustice and systemic racism. So systemic racism is something that actually is a separate but connected issue that organizations have to look at. And this is not no one's fault, right? This has actually been baked into the system, particularly in this country, of processes and things that are happening that are not creating a level playing field. And so that's one very specific part of the system that really shouldn't be lumped in with everything else, right? So then we have that as one area that I think organizations need to address, because it's a big issue and there's going to be a lot more pressure as we move forward to address that very specific issue. Now let's go back to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So diversity is defined simply by the way in which people come together in a workplace and they're different. So it includes different, you know, racial and ethnic diversity. It includes cognitive diversity. It includes disabilities. It includes veteran status. It includes being a single mom versus, having a partner, not being in COVID, health issues, right? That might present challenges. And so leaders must, in order to be equitable, have a system in place, not necessarily to think about a blanket fairness across the board, but it's a system in place that understands and considers how differences impact the way that we show up at work and how people are either recognized, rewarded, or even bear consequences based on these differences. So that is diversity, kind of the numbers. What do things look like and how diverse are the variety of people in your group? We're very diverse, and do you make space for that? Equity is figuring out how to acknowledge the systems and level that playing field to have compassion and honor those differences. And inclusion is now going back into this conversation about culture. So one thing that I've heard, and you probably heard this, I think it's almost a cliche now, but that diversity is being invited to the dance and inclusion is being asked to dance, right? So inclusion is literally the actions that you take within your culture that considers different perspectives and different needs. So one big one is many cultures, you know, they go to happy hour on a regular basis, right? And drinking culture can be big, but there are people that maybe because they don't drink, don't participate. So they're out of the loop with certain things, but B, it might just be something where they're just not able to do after work things because they have to get home for family obligations, right? This of course is pre-COVID, but there's still these virtual happy hours and jokes that are going on. And it's not to say that we can't honor some of those traditions that I think a lot of people hold dear, but it's the thinking about what else can we do to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to feel included and to be a part of these conversations that happen outside of our traditional meetings, because we all know in the workplace that that's where a lot of the information flows. It's the off conversation, the after meeting conversation in terms of where the information flows. I'll pause right there if you have a question, and I can talk very specifically about what I think organizations are doing right and wrong, but I'll pause right there for you.
No, I appreciate it, because you're in the process of answering my 8-part question. So I appreciate that. And I think from a leadership perspective too. So yes, I agree with you about what happens both inside and outside of the organization, and also inclusion. There's the engagement that we talk about with employee engagement, also feeling like they're able to bring their whole selves to work and that they're contributing to the organization and they're being acknowledged too. So that's more about inside, not outside communication loops, but inside the actual work that they're doing, that they feel heard and that they understand, but maybe even their impact on the business of what they're contributing. That's also partly inclusion too, right?
Yes. However, I have a little bit of an interesting perspective on the words that we use. If I told you right now, Kevin, go ahead and bring your whole self. You might say, well, did I leave myself at home? What happened? Or if I said,
Can you engage me? Can you make
someone feel heard? Some of this is a part of the problem, is that we use these words. And this is also why I think a lot of leaders and organizations end up feeling a little discouraged, because we have these words, but we really don't know how to turn these words into actions. And so what does that look like for a leader? So bringing your whole self is actually a leader saying, or a tradition or habit within your organization, where you are saying constantly, in this organization, we want you to be able to feel that you can be yourself. So what that means is that we give everyone a chance to talk. And at our check-in meetings, we actually ask questions that dig a little deeper, if you're comfortable, to share a little more about who you are. And we honor that and we talk about that. And that's a part of our tradition in the organization. So it needs to be a little bit of a strategy. And some people, right, they may not feel comfortable sharing personally, and that's okay. That's honored and welcomed here. Other people, they don't function as well if they're not able to connect and share. It's a cultural dynamic that you create space for. And so it's a communication strategy. And I'll tell you this, Kevin, and again, we're in the business of developing leaders. This stuff is not intuitive. If you're in an organization and you don't have communication training around how to create a conscious and connected culture for your leaders, and you're expecting them just to kind of do it because you said, yeah, have empathy. It's not an intuitive thing. It is a technical skill in a way. It's a leadership strategy that is something that you do on a regular basis, and you get better at it with practice.
Because otherwise it is just lip service and a checkbox.
Yes.
So, and I agree with you on that. I think that, and being able to create to that individuals can also, you know, have uncomfortable conversations. I know that there's, you know, a lot of organizations that had very open, visceral conversations last year around, for example, the murder of George Floyd and all the things that have happened outside of it, out there in the world, that do impact us as individuals, some more than others, obviously, and have those uncomfortable conversations about bias, about differences. That's important. Leaders, you need to be able to facilitate that, right?
Absolutely. You need to, two things. You need to be able to move through discomfort to get to a space of comfort. And the only way to move through discomfort is to do it, right? To actually have the conversation. But here's the challenge. Organizations are right to be afraid of people having these conversations because they're often not had well. We actually have at Kusai Global a leadership training of how to have sense, to have for leaders to actually facilitate sensitive conversations. This is something that you really need to be highly skilled to navigate differences. You have to have a high level of emotional intelligence. Yeah. You need to be able to speak as a representative of the organization, not a representative, depending on who's facilitating, of your own values and ideas, right? So there's a real tricky middle ground there for the person or people that might be facilitating or having these conversations. I talk to my leaders all the time. I ask them, what hat do you have on? And many leaders need to know that when you are wearing the hat of the organization, you have to think about how you want to frame things and how you want to guide things. And it has to be a kind of a group consensus or a collaboration around how the organization wants to proceed and what parts of the conversation do they want to have. And not to get too prescriptive, I mean, we've been leading racial and social justice conversations across literally dozens of organizations, and they've gone very, very well. But there's a framework that we use and there's a model. And my definition of going well is everyone, no matter what your perspective, no matter what side of the aisle that you come from, leave this experience saying, wow, I feel informed, I feel elevated, and I feel honored and valued, and I'm ready to hear more. That's how we describe going well in these kinds of conversations.
So you definitely have touched on and highlighted, again, what they should do and work well. But what if I am, I mean, if I don't even know about you and your organization, I know it's going to vary, maybe I'm not a mid-sized organization that's like, we really want to kick off some important inclusion initiatives at our organization, open up these conversations. I mean, what besides calling Talia and team, right? I mean, what should I do first? I mean, talk, you know, get together with HR and what is your recommendation there?
So I never discourage action. And this may sound biased, but often within organizations, I do recommend getting help. It literally is almost like saying, you know, I've got health issues, but I don't have access to a doctor. So what do I do? There are some things you can do at home, right? Yeah, like get a blow dryer to fix an ear infection. I don't know, right? There are some things to get at home, but just remember that these are sort of the things you're going to try to see if they work. And when you try things, just like if you get the blow dryer to try to fix an ear infection, I don't know if you've heard of that. Some things may get a little tricky. You may have an issue and you could even make a challenge worse.
But worse. And that does not work. It doesn't right. work.
It doesn't work. Right?
Does it work? No.
So we all need help, and that's okay. But right. With that said, what can you do right now if you're in an organization and let's just say you haven't had the conversation about bringing in some outside support? I would say begin to talk about what you would need to do to get some outside support if you want to identify what the problem is. But you can start with general conversations. You don't have to go deep into racial and social justice issues if you feel that the culture's not ready for that. You can have general conversations leading with this. What do we need to do, all of us, not just the people that are walking around the organization that are a specific gender or the brown people walking around the organization, but what can we do for all of us to begin to adopt some habits that make us all feel included and even make this a better place to work? So you can start with that overarching umbrella. And then the next question to just examine, and these are questions without judgment, without conclusions. It's just opening the space to say, where are our biggest areas for improvement that you see from your perspective as an employee, as a frontline worker, as staff, as an employee or a middle manager? Where do you see the challenges from your perspective? As a senior leader, where do you see the challenges from your perspective? So I would say it's perspective gathering so that you can begin to identify where the challenges are, where the pain is in the body, right? We need to start to identify where we need to start looking as we start to ease into some of these challenges. Literally, that goes a long way because at least it says that we're not ignoring this. We're not just going business as usual. We are examining and beginning to look and listen to what we might be able to understand more about this culture.
Absolutely. And I thank you for sharing that. I want to segue a little bit to something where I'm going to actually show my political persuasion a little here, but I am very excited about where the Biden administration has been going with diversity. I have two daughters And to see the fact that we have a female vice president for the first time ever in our country is very exciting for me, but even more so than that. And for a person of color, and the list goes on, and the cabinet members that he's trying. So this idea of really embracing diversity on our government level, another kind of world of work organization, how do you think hopefully positively will impact both private and public employers going forward? Is this exciting for you? What do you think about this?
Well, on a personal and a business level, it's very exciting because I'll tell you personally, because of Kamala Harris, I also went to Howard University.
Right,
and, you know, it's really interesting. I feel the difference when I connect with people, that they're actually looking at me through a different lens. So when we think about unconscious bias, I have this experience where when I connect with people, even if it's on Zoom, there is this underlying thing of having to sort of prove yourself. And you can feel it. It's something that I can't really describe or pinpoint. I can't put data behind it, but you can feel it, right? You can feel just this skepticism or kind of just feel like someone's being evaluated. With new leadership and a new vision of what leadership looks like, I actually feel like something about that has just completely transformed. I feel like I'm being treated differently in many spaces is one thing. Secondly, from a business perspective, it kind of reminds me, I'm just a really, really quick story. It's another kind of doctor story, but I took my son to the doctor because he's been eating terribly during COVID. And we know that this was coming. We knew that we were going to have to eat healthier, but we go to the doctor and the doctor looks at me and says, hey, you know, Talia, you're a part of this problem, and I need you to help get the food right. And so that's how I feel leadership that is interested in this topic is. Everybody kind of knows it was coming. They know it's a problem, but you need an authority figure. You need someone in leadership to say, listen, if you were figuring out whether or not you were going to focus on it, let me help you out. We're going to put down some rules and some regulations and some guidance to ensure that you begin to make this a big part of the process. So in this case, you know, leadership definitely matters. For organizations and people, there is a huge impact because I think that what ends up happening is that leaders in organizations, individuals in organizations, they have permission to press, permission to press the issue. And it is a press where it's risky if you say this is not the answer, this is no longer a priority, or let's work on something else first. That is absolutely not no longer allowed in this current space, right? And so it's helpful for everybody because we all have competing priorities. We all get busy. We all get tired. And it seems like we put things on the back burner, and somebody has to stand up and say, I don't care how busy you are. I don't care how many tasks you have. People first. And we have to take a stand to know better and do better, in the words of Maya Angelou. So yes.
Amen to that. Absolutely. So Talia, as we round out this podcast, and you've already highlighted many of these things, but again, what are the best ways for organizations, how they can continue to promote inclusion, development, and advancement of women and minority leaders today? What should a 1-2 takeaway there?
Absolutely. So advancement of women, minorities, leaders in an organization, I would say to take action, to be very concerned about your culture and think about the habits. If you're an organization that's not very diverse, take a look at how you got there. One of the things that people don't realize is I find, as I'm a Black woman and I own a company, and when I put out advertisements, I find it difficult not to get a diverse candidate base. And so what has happened this far that's made this organization not diverse, right? What, there's something going on there, because I want organizations to understand this reality. That actually takes effort not to have diversity in your organization, because the talent is out there. If you don't think it is, it is. And so to take a look at that. And the other thing is to keep having a communication strategy that lets its power of suggestion, power of influence and persuasion, every leader in every organization and employee constantly repeating and bringing it up and talking about it, engaging with people that are doing mass efforts to support recruitment and retention, the repetition, and people like you, Kevin, that are bringing this kind of conversation to your podcast, we have to keep it going because we don't want it to die with every news cycle is the big deal.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And I don't ever want to hear another leader of public, private organization, any leader say that the people they're looking for aren't out there. And especially for those who are leaders who are saying that look like me, who are white males, who are saying we can't find the people that we need. That is not correct, because they are out there. And it's not just, I mean, women and minorities and people of color and also people of different generations and ages too, right? I mean, ageism is a big issue today too. And I don't want to devolve into that right now, but that's something else that's happening in the workplace too. And there's individuals that are extremely experienced and skilled that are looking for work. So I don't want anybody to ever tell me that there's, and even hiring for potential, but that's a whole nother podcast, you tell you. I don't want to.
Yes.
So one of the last things I want to ask you before we wrap up is, what are you most excited about as it relates to in DE&I and the progress and impact going forward?
I am most excited about the diversity within the grassroots efforts that are happening. I'm so excited about the allyship that I'm seeing. One of the things that I have noticed that I have not seen before, I've been doing this for about 20 years, you know, and I did cultural competence at Howard, or, you know, a couple decades ago. And so I've been a part of this work around unconscious bias before it became a thing, right? But one thing that I am so excited about is that an organization, it's not just minorities and affinity groups that are interested in change. Everybody is getting on board. And so I'm excited about the allyship. I have never seen people speak up with more rigor before in my career. And that really excites me. I'm actually seeing leaders, you know, speak out and say, we do not do that here. I'll just share this. This was been quoted saying this a couple of times, but I have conversations with a few Ivy League students. And some of them are saying that they will walk in, and these are white Ivy League students, they'll walk into an organization because they have choices. And they'll ask, do you have a robust diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy? And if you say no, they are out of there. And so there are these things that we do. You want high potential talent. You may not be able to retain your non-minority people if you don't get the diversity thing right, because people are taking a stand and they're saying, no, this is not okay. And values are beginning to override a lot of other factors that were once maybe more important to people.
Let's sustain it now, right?
Yes.
Let's sustain it. And let's continue to affect positive change. Yeah. So the last thing, Talia, that I love to ask all my guests is, we're always working. We're always talking about work, and that's fine. That's important. You love what you do. I love what I do. But what else does Talia like to do?
So I'm obsessed with Peloton.
Oh, are you really? Yeah.
I know. I'm obsessed with Peloton. So that's my new, particularly during COVID. So I'll give a shout out. I love Allie Love on Peloton. My key is Live Butterfly. So if you want to take a ride with me and high five me is one thing. The second thing that I'm learning that I love is bachata dancing is my new obsession. And so, yeah, so bachata, it's kind of it's not salsa, but it's this very, I don't know, it's a Latinesque kind of dance. And so I don't know as much about the history, but I'm broadening my experience with doing that. And then lastly, my son, he's actually launching an app called Tribe. And so this is a very entrepreneurial family. One of the things I talk about as a Black African-American family is that some of us have been wired for struggle. And so I want to make sure that myself and the people I connect with that we're wired for progress. Nice. And so we spend a lot of time reading, broadening and exposing ourselves to a variety of different things so that we can be a part. That's our one little 1% that we could do, is be a part of making progress and being the best that we can, maximizing our potential.
Oh, that's wonderful. So what, just real quick, what's the app? Is it Tribe?
It's called Tribe. Yes. And it should be on the App Store shortly. So the app is actually, it's wonderful. It brings communities together. So it's an opportunity for parents to connect with different people. So if you have piano classes, if you have lacrosse, if you're looking for some resource, you can divide your children up and organize it all so that you can make better connections. And so he's creating this whole world for parents. And so I'm so, so very proud of him.
Well, that's awesome. And again, thank you for the work that you do as well. And yes, I have two daughters, 10 and 12. We've been a full year of distance learning now. We hope finally going back soon, but we've been doing well. We've come closer as a family, and I'm learning to play the drums. So that's my big fun.
Oh, great. My father's a drummer. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So listen, Talia, thank you so much for being on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. I really appreciate it. Maybe one of these days we can meet in person.
I would love to. Thank you for having this conversation. I'll have to tell your group that your questions were fantastic and just the richness of it. So I'm always excited to have these conversations. So thank you for your contributions to this work, Kevin.
Oh, thank you very much too. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Candy Shop Talk podcast. For more information about Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards and benchmark research, visit www.thetalentboard.org.